Brazilian goalkeeper Aurelio Gomez arrived in the Premier League in 2008 after signing for Tottenham Hotspur from Dutch club PSV. Known for his outstanding reflexes and penalty saves, what is less known about Gomez is his background before football and his generosity off the pitch. He's closing in on 150 appearances for Watford and kindly sat down with the Offside Rule at their London Colney training base to discuss his career to date.
The Offside Rule exclusives with Kate Borsay and Lindsay Hooper.
Aurelio, thank you very much for joining us. I want to start by jumping in with the fact that you were pretty late to football. You were more or less 16 years old before you actually became a goalkeeper, weren't you?
It's not normal, you know, in the football life. But yeah, that's happened. And when you want to do things, it's never too late. And I put that on my mind. I wanted to be a footballer in that time. And yeah, my place was in goal, and I worked very hard. So I'm still learning till today.
So you had played some football, and you'd actually played, was it a striker or a forward role? And then what was it that made you say, actually, I'm more suited to being between the sticks?
Yeah, I was a Peter Crouch before. I liked to score a few goals. And of course, one day I was playing, the goalkeeper, I was playing like a Sunday football, you know, and the goalkeeper didn't show up, and was a place in goal to play. I was going to be on the bench anyway, so I said, I put my hand up, I can play goal, and I never did before. So I played in goal, and I did very well, and I just kept playing goal because in that time I realized that could be my place.
I imagine with any Brazilian that they are born into football. Football's part of your life. Yeah. When did you start playing football? Is that true for you as well? Were you always kicking a ball around? Was there a big football culture when you were growing up?
Yeah, I came from a very small town. You know, I born in a farm. And so we used to play on the street. And in that time, every kid in Brazil, every kid, they want to play football. They want to become a footballer, you know. And sometimes we used to kick anything, you know, just to say that I was playing football. But sometimes it wasn't even ball to kick. I used to make it with clothes, something with clothes, you know. That also socks with the socks. We used to do this, and
so here we have a phrase: jumpers for goalposts. Exactly. With you, it was jumpers for balls.
Exactly. Instead. We because it was a difficult time for us, we didn't have enough money to buy a football, and that was a tough time. But we enjoyed, you know.
Who did you want to be? Who were your footballing idols at that time?
Yeah, to be honest, because I started to play as an outfield player, always looking for Romario, you know, and players like that. Because when I become a goalkeeper later on, and I turn on my my mind, and I start to focus on Dida. He played for AC Milan as well. And of course, the big goalkeeper in Brazil, big name, also Tafarel. And I start to follow him. I start to want to be like him, you know, like them, because it's the two goalkeepers that I was looking for, to be like them. But you're never going to be like someone. You have to be yourself. And I try to catch as much as I can in that situation.
You played for Cruzeiro in Brazil, and you had a lot of success with them and were brought to the attention of a scout. You mentioned Romario. It's actually the same scout who scouted Romario who spotted you, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the one, Peter de Vries, Dutch scout. And it was like a funny. I was playing for Brazil under 23 in a competition in Chile. And PSV wanted a goalkeeper. Three goalkeepers in that time. They was going to sign three goalkeepers. And then he watched me on a warm-up, and he text goes hitting in that time. And he said, number one, Gomez, number two, Gomez, number three, Gomez. Oh, three goalkeepers. Really? Sign him. Amazing. Sign him. And he find Brazil so many talent players, mm-hmm. and it was great to be scouted by him.
Did you know about his record at that point? Because also, I mean, he discovered Ronaldo. Yeah. And then since then, you've got this huge connection with the Premier League. But he does. He works as an advisor for Roman Abramovich, yeah. at Chelsea now.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's just, it's become natural for him. But I didn't know him in that time, you know. And I just heard that someone did see me on a warm-up in that game. And I played well, by the way, in the game. But he left the stadium. Mm. He said he left the stadium just on warm-up. I don't need to see anything from a goalkeeper. You know, I'm not looking for any other player. I'm just looking for a goalkeeper. And that's it. And he left the stadium on a warm-up.
So that's where that decision comes along to go to PSV. What sort of decision was that for you to make? Because you've been born and bred on a farm in a very small village, as you say. One of 12, you're the 11th in line of your brothers and sisters. Yeah. It must have been quite an upheaval to think, I've got to that now, leave my family.
Yeah, it was a very difficult decision to make because it was going my first time to live abroad as well.
Mm. And, how old were you?
I was 21 years old and... Yeah. And it's never easy, you know. We have some example, like Richarlison here at Watford. I know how difficult is it for them, you know. And that was my difficulty that I find as well. But it was a big opportunity for me to give to my family when I dream to become a footballer. Mm. To give them something different, you know, some hope in life. Life is not just about money, but it's just about to have a good, you know, a good thing. And in that time, they didn't have even a house to live, you know. Even a toilet inside of the houses, we didn't have that. And that was a great opportunity for me to deliver something to them.
Kate's a mom. She's got two children running around. I mean, they're sort of getting to the age now, aren't they, where you're starting to do hobbies. But can you imagine having 12?
I cannot think of anything. I mean, I'd just lose them on a regular basis. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to take them all out anywhere. And if I did, I'd definitely come back with like two less than I started with. Yeah. So one of 12 is just insane. Did you actively make a decision to help your family? Because, you know, down at number 11... Mm-hmm. in the order of brothers and sisters, it's quite a lot for a kid to take on, to suddenly think, well, I'm going to be the one to help try and take my family out of this, to try and give them a better life.
Yeah, because I was tired to see my mum every day come back from work, you know. And it was difficult to take it. And I was seeing my brothers and sister going away. They was going to make for themselves, but it was difficult to make for my mum and dad, you know. And I put that on my mind that I needed to do something different. That was the encouragement that I had in that time. So I had to take it. I had to take it, the responsibility, even if I wasn't the oldest. But I was going to help them as well. If I helped my mom and my dad, I was going to help them as well, because they was going to be... to be glad and happy because of that situation. So I focus on that, you know. Doesn't matter what's going to happen, but I have to do something else different to help my family.
Let's fast forward a bit before we come back to your playing career, because have you managed to do that? Have you managed to do exactly what you wanted? Is it about the fact that they can come and see you and you just fly them over whenever? Mm. Is that what you wanted?
I got more than what I wanted. I just wanted to give them a little bit better life. But God gave me more than we deserved as well, and more than we wanted, more than I wanted. But of course, when I go back home and I see my mom living in a good house, and I can tell mom, if you want to come over, just take the plane, you know. And that's amazing. Mm. That's amazing. The feeling is amazing. I still sometimes think that I'm dreaming, you know, because it's a long way. It's a long way. It's all the way from Brazil, you know, totally different from Europe. And And to live here and to be successful is never easy. I'm almost 14 years away from home, and I still trying to do my best every day.
Do you have to get security now for that? Because in Brazil, there will be a bit of jealousy out there as well, the fact that you've managed to get this life, and of course there's so many poor people. Mm-hmm. Do you have to now protect that?
Yeah, I needed to move my mom's house now. I need to build another one in a safe place. Because the people start to realize that she was living there, you know, and every time that I come over, it's not because I don't bother, you know, if they come to ask for an autograph or something like that, but it's because of the security of her. I don't mind if they take me, but if they take my mom, I was going to be, you know, very upset as well. And we decide to move her. I decide to move her to another place, different place, which is much secure now.
Just picking up on that, is there a very real threat in Brazil that, you know, something might happen to your mum or to your family? Because I think it's hard for us to understand, particularly when we're, you know, looking at all the wealth in the Premier League and players buying things, excess, you know, gold dripping off them, flash cars and everything else. And it's hard and very humbling to hear that actually that's not your story.
No.
You've got access to that, but actually that's against a backdrop in Brazil where you've got to think about security, you've got to think about safety, something that a lot of players in the Premier League now, they don't have to think about it.
No, it's amazing to live over here, you know. It's easy to live over here. Of course, I miss Brazil, but sometimes you cannot enjoy what you work for. The people don't have the same, like here, you're going, anyone going to the same place, you know, doesn't matter if you are a footballer or if you are a house cleaner, you go to the same place. In Brazil, no, you're going to, that's the rich people goes there, and you cannot get access on that place. That's the big problem, you know, the difference between people in Brazil. Mm-hmm. You know, but anywhere in Brazil now, if you go, you have to be careful. Unfortunately, you have to be careful, because if you stop in a stoplight, for example, they can catch you in the stoplight. And unfortunately, you cannot enjoy your life as we do in England.
You are very humble. That's clear from what we've heard so far. Is it hard to see young, entitled players not having to work that hard and getting a similar wage or accolades to you? Is that must be hard, you know, whether it's through their own fault or just the fact that they've come through a particular system within football or been surrounded by particular people, when they're not grateful, when they don't get that they have to do stuff in the community, when it's not just about what happens when they've got a pair of football boots on the pitch. Is that hard? That must be hard to see when so much excess isn't appreciated, you know, when people lose their humility.
Yeah, I think so, but it's not their fault as well, you know, it's not their fault. They have to get that from, you know, from when they start to understand life. If you just give them what they want so easy, they will become that kind of person. You know, and what we used to get in Brazil is, oh, you're going to have a very difficult life. So when you get something, I'm going to, oh, I have to be careful with this because it was hard work. I have to say, they thank God every day because it was a hard work. And he managed to give me everything that I have now. So maybe it's not their fault. It's from the beginning when they start to understand that we have to change a little bit, because their life is going to be much better. Mm-hmm. They will appreciate more what they get, what they achieve, because they're going to realize that it was very difficult to get that, you know.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Offside Rule TV, for exclusive video football content.
What do you think people mean when they talk about goalkeepers and they talk about you being a different breed? You're not like the outfield players. No. What do you think people mean by that?
I believe to face one by one, and I and sometimes to get the ball in the face, that has to be different, because it's not outfield players, they're not going to put the ball in front of the ball like we do.
Yeah.
You know, I understand this. I understand on this way, and so sometimes we have to give our life. I risk my life so many times to put my face in front of the ball, because this is my job. And to be a goalkeeper, you have to be like this. You have to realize that your life is in danger all the time. It's, of course, the risk is minimum, but there is a risk.
You've touched on PSV already, and despite the initial reservation of the good people of Holland being not quite sure about a Brazilian between the six, you definitely convinced them otherwise, winning four consecutive seasons in the Eredivisie, advancing in the Champions League further than the club had done in quite some time. So overall, a really successful period in your career. What do you think of when you think of that time? What emotions are attached? Is there a favourite memory that kind of sums up that time for you?
When you win things, is the best to remember, and it's the best to have the better memory as well, you know. And but my connection with the club, my connection with the fans, I believe made the difference. And also Tottenham, I had great connections with the fans, but we didn't win anything, and that was a difference between PSV and Tottenham, because we won many things over there, you know. And when you win things at the club, you're going to be remembered forever, I believe. My connection with the club is still, these days, the same as before.
Riding on the crest of a wave at PSV, you attract interest from several clubs. Mm-hmm. You go to Spurs.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What happens when you get to Spurs? How different was it? Not just a new country, but a new league, yeah. New fans, yeah. New pressures. Tell us yeah. about it.
I believe the difference is the league. The difference is the league. I find that when I first come, I find the league very difficult, very hard. It's still these days, but I know the shortcuts now. So it's easier to deal with all the situation with the media, which is more here than in Holland. I used to have that in Brazil, but I believe I forgot about a little bit how to deal with this kind of situation. And of course, Spurs is a huge club in England, so the fans, they demand, the media, they demand, you know, and every day you have to deliver your best. So sometimes when you're not emotionally very good and you are under pressure, like I felt at that time, you're not going to deliver your best. Mm. And of course, most of the time was my fault to rely a little bit on someone else instead of myself. Mm. So I played so many times with injury, so I should have done that. These days, you know, I was going to act very different, because I understand that in this league you have to be pretty much 100%.
Mm. How many percentage of games do you think during that time you played with an injury or in pain?
Yeah.
How much of that was going on?
I remember my first 6 months was very difficult. I had a knock on my rib. So Alan Hatter in that time in the training session, so I couldn't, in that session, I couldn't dive to my right. I was diving just, my training session was just to my left. So my first season, probably 70% I played with injury.
Do you think you should have been more honest about that?
Yeah, I think so, because I wanted to show, you know.
Pressure.
Of course, yeah. I want to show what I was capable to do, but sometimes when you're not 100%, you are not going to play well. So I remember when that was later on, when I was playing against Man City, when we qualified for the Champions League, a week before, I had a grade 3 groin injury. So I couldn't kick the ball in that game. And Daniel Levy just called, please play next game. We need you to play next game. And I was there again, you know, putting my face. So fortunately, we won that game. But imagine if you didn't win and I was in the fault. Nobody will ask.
Nobody would even care about your injury.
No, no, no. Because if I'm there, it's because I can play. So I had this type of thing so many times.
I had to smile to myself when you said I can't kick the ball because I was just thinking about how far you can throw it.
Yeah. I was doing that in the game. But imagine back pass. I was telling the defender, so please kick the ball forward. Don't give me the ball back. So if the ball was in my hand, it was easy to deal with.
The one thing that people are always going to remember you for, certainly Spurs fans, you know, there's the game against Sunderland where you actually saved two of three penalties. No. I mean, this is something that's still not been repeated in the Premier League.
I did.
And you repeated it. You repeated it, but no one else has ever repeated it.
Yes, that was not common. Yeah, that's it's different stuff. Or oh, was special for me in that day. We lost the game, but I believe Darren Bent, he's still having a nightmare with me because I played against him when we were here at Watford. At the beginning, when I signed for Watford, the championship, I played against him and it was a penalty kick against me. And he was so nervous, so nervous to kick the ball. But he scored. He scored in this time. But it's a time that you have to be calm, you have to be relaxed. And I'm this type of person. In that time, I give the responsibility to the striker. I let him choose the side that is going to kick. So if I manage to wait until he kicks the ball, I have a big chance to save. And that's what's happened in that game.
Are you someone who visualises things before they happen? Because you speak to a lot of footballers, especially strikers, and they say, before it even kicked off, I saw myself scoring two goals.
Yeah, but I don't think like that. It's the moment. The moment is important. Exactly the time when the player kicks the ball is the important time for me to react. You know, if I react in the right side, the opportunity is great for me to save it.
There was a rocky period at Spurs. They signed Brad Friedel and you, you know, slightly fell down the pecking order. And then I was looking through your stats and your games and there's a very definite period there from sort of August 2011 through to January 2013 when you went on loan to Hoffenheim where you didn't play a game. And I know injury played some part, but that's a horribly long time to be without competitive football. Yeah. How did you get through it? What did you do and what was going through your mind? I mean, that must have been so tough considering all the success that you'd had, the pressure on yourself to provide for your family. Yeah. You'd become a big success. And then suddenly you're staring at not playing your very reason for being here.
Yeah, that was a very, very, like you said, a very tough time because that's the first time that I was in that situation, you know. But what I can say to you is that I learn a lot. When the things come well on your way, you will behave in different way. You're always happy, you know, you try to be positive all the time. But in the tough time, you have to be like that. Because it's so easy to be happy when the things is coming in your way. So in that time, I try to be positive all the time. I was the first in the sessions. I was one day, Luka Modric, he came to me. What are you doing here? What are you still doing here? You cannot be here for so long because you're a great goalkeeper. You can see on the training sessions, you know. But I said to him, so my time will come. My time, I don't have to worry. I have to work. And work more because I need to be prepared when my times come.
Was it a manager thing? I mean, why weren't you playing? You don't suddenly become a bad goalkeeper. You've still got those skills. And I know that other keepers came in, but did you try and rationalise it? Could you try and rationalise it? Was it a managerial thing? Was it a personal? You know, why?
I was trying to ask myself this question. And maybe it's because I didn't deliver what they expected me to deliver to them. So I had a great time at Spurs as well, great memories, you know. But probably they thought that I didn't deliver what they expected. Maybe they expected more and more. And sometimes you have a limitation, and you have to understand. I didn't, that time, wasn't transformation for a good to a bad goalkeeper. But maybe they thought that was time to change. And of course, I was very upset in that time, but with myself sometimes. So I gave away so many opportunities as well. I cannot blame just the manager. You know, I have to understand that I gave away so many opportunities as well. And maybe it was a time, you know, for me to have that time and think your life wasn't going to be just a successful life. You have to understand that you're going to pass through difficult days and a difficult period. And that was the difficult period in my life.
It is about ups and downs, I think, for everybody, isn't it? You've got to go through the ups, you've got to go through the downs. And for a footballer, that directly reflects whether you're playing more or whether you're not. And then you get this loan move out to Hoffenheim. And it's pretty incredible stuff, because you look at it on paper and you think, well, how did this happen? Because you... three games and then you're captain. Yeah. How does that come about?
The manager was desperate to sign me because he heard from another manager from Holland that I could change the dressing room with my experience, what he understood from what he heard. He said, we need you. We need you. We are bottom of the table. So I told him, I'm here and I want to help. The first thing that I realized when I went there, the dressing room was separated. Three players there, three players there. Wow. And the goalkeeper was making huge problem. So first thing that I said, if you want to go out of this situation, we need to become together. Otherwise, no chance. No chance. They can sign Messi here. Not going to come out of this situation. So the first game was okay. The second game, we become a team. Not because of me, but I think the influence, the people, they start to speak to another players. So we need to do this. Mm-hmm. We need to do that. We need to follow in the same way. Otherwise, we're not going to make it. So... yeah, was that the case, I believe, when the managers, he saw in me someone that can lead the dressing room was because he gave me the captain. Yeah.
You've not exactly been a journeyman in football, but you've had a lot of dressing rooms. Because, I mean, if you look at Watford, the current club that you're at the moment, you've had six different managers in your time. Yeah. You've obviously had Brazil when you've been part of that squad. Hoffenheim experience, Tottenham, PSV. Do you know instantly when you walk in that dressing room, you talk about how you picked up on that at Hoffenheim and they were struggling. Do you know when you've got a success, you've got a successful team around you and you think, yes, we're going to do great, because I can feel that already?
I know the players.
Yeah.
Understand them straight away. The player that we can count with them and the player that we can't.
And when have you felt that has been the best?
I believe at PSV that was the best. Also, a period at Spurs as well, we had a very good togetherness. And sometimes, most of the time, the successful team, they have to be togetherness in there, because otherwise, it's not individual game. It's a collective, and you need to be always together. Otherwise, if there is one there, and the second I start to fall, and the third I start to fall, that's a problem. That's where the manager has to jump in the middle. Even the captains, they have to jump in the middle. They have to try to solve the problem. Otherwise, he can throw away the whole season.
See, at the time that you were at Spurs, and I imagine that the period that you're talking about where you probably felt very optimistic, you had some sensational players. You've already mentioned Luka Modric, but Gareth Bale as well. It feels like at Spurs now their project's changing. You know, maybe they will hang on to Harry Kane, maybe they won't let him go, but they let Bale go. And was there a part of you that was thinking, no, hold on to him?
Yeah, but to be honest, it was difficult in that situation to hold on to him. They could see in the long term, Spurs like they are today. but it was opportunities for him as well. Disappointed, we get disappointed when we lose the best players, and that was the case in that time when we lost Modric as well. But we have to understand that football is like this. But also the club has to be prepared to replace. They have to be clever and prepared. You know, and sometimes you cannot rely on one player. You can have the example of Coutinho at Liverpool. Therefore, oh, we lost our season because Coutinho is leaving. So, no, they were prepared to keep going, to keep pushing. And they are playing Champions League. So, most of the time you have to think like this. You're going to lose the best players, but you have to be prepared to replace it with a similar or better player.
The Offside Rule exclusives are available to download for free via Audioboom and iTunes.
You've played under a lot of different managers in your time. At Spurs, Juan de Ramos brought you in, but you were under Harry Redknapp there. Luis Felipe Scolari, when you played in Brazil, was your manager, I believe. Hiddink, you've already mentioned, at PSV. Tell us one of the most game-changing managers that you've played under. Who's really got you thinking? Who's been a big influence on you, helping you to get this mindset, this very, very level-headed mindset? That's a lot about you, but it's also about the people who you've worked under as well.
So I can tell the manager, that's two manager, Dutch manager. One was Gus Hiddink, the first one. And the second one was Ronald Koeman. I really enjoyed to work under them, you know, because they understand very well the game. And what they say every time makes sense. And that was good. It was good time. It was good time with them. I really enjoyed. And they even when I signed for, Gus Hiddink signed me at PSV. Even that time I had a problem with my dad, and he understood that situation. I find out that my dad had a cancer in Brazil, so I needed time to be with him in Brazil. So he came to me and said, "You have the time that you need. You don't have to worry about the club. Go there and see how your dad is, and then come back when you want." So that is the first of all is the respect, and he showed me the respect that. It's not just about him. He wasn't thinking about him, about the club. He was thinking about me first, and that was great. So I took that from my life, I believe. From that time, that was some kind of management that I wanted for my life. Maybe I'm not going to become a manager one day, but... you have to understand first the situation that is going to happen with the players. Sometimes the players are very stressful, and because this is a kind of the people just think about the money, about everything. But every day we are under pressure, to be honest. And when you have a manager that understands your situation, it's a great, you know, and. I learned a lot with Gus Hiddink, and also with Ronald Koeman. We had not long time together. He left for manager Valencia, I believe, on that time. But he showed me how good he is on the pitch and how good he can be as a manager. You know.
And what about a strange, weird, and wonderful thing? Because I'm always surprised by the answers we get. What things made you perhaps a strange incident or a training routine, and it always throws up something random.
No, sometimes I get amazed of is some manager they with the fingers outside they are showing up anything, but we don't train that. We never train that.
So they're giving you instructions.
Yeah, instructions with the fingers. Oh, like this, like this, like this.
And none of you know what's going on.
Yeah, most of the time. or pretty much 100% of the time. Yeah, because if you want to pass some instruction, you need to call the captain or someone that is close, because it's not going to change the game.
No.
No. You have to prepare.
Fingers are not going
to
do it, are they?
You have to prepare during the week. If you're not prepared during the week, it doesn't matter. You're going to. Of course, the team has to feel that your manager is outside to make some decision, to make some change. But he's not
making. He can have 15 fingers. It doesn't make a difference.
No. He can put there. He can put his assistant there as well. But he's not going to change anything. That was amazing.
Maybe you understand the finger gestures more than you think, because you came to Watford and you had 1 year deal with an option, and now six years later?
Four years.
So you had a 4 year contract then on the table.
Yeah, 4 and 5 gonna be my fifth year, next season.
You understand all those finger twitchings then more than you think.
I did because in that time I needed to change my life. You know, I needed to come from that difficult situation that I was at the Spurs, you know. And Watford gave me a great opportunity to continue in England, because my family was settled, my kids at the school. And so today I cannot think about myself, just about myself. When I moved to Holland, it was just me, myself and my wife. So it was easier to make decisions, you know. And was a great opportunity that Watford gave me. So, and I wanted to make sure that in that time, when I sat with the owner to discuss, I told him, when I heard what he wanted me to do, I said, no, I want to make a 1 year contract, because we're going to make a better one after. And after, because the years that I were at PSV were the same. First year one contract, second year one contract, another contract, third year another contract, and before I left, my fourth contract signed in 4 years. So that was every time I normally put my target. If I go to my target, and that's a motivation as well. My motivation when I signed 1 year for Watford is to get promoted, and we done that. So, and then I went to the owner. That's the time. That's the time to sign a new deal. So let's do it in our way now. He said, no, you're crazy. No, let's do it different now that we done last time. So, and that was good. Even, I believe, the relationship with the club. Because we're not going to demand, like I said to him, if I sign a contract like last season, 2 years contract, I told him, don't worry, if I want to go, I will go, because you're going to let me go, I believe, and I'm not going to want anything from you. Because, you know, that's, if I'm paying you back, you know, with my work on the pitch, I'm happy. If not, I don't want your money. And won the money of the club.
Not just your work on the pitch, though. It's your work off the pitch. I mean, everybody that I speak to around Watford says if there is anyone that is in doing all the community initiatives, being someone who's out and visual and signing autographs and doing all those things, it's you. And, you know, you hear what you say about being a child and being perceptive enough to know, actually, I want to give something back. Something is in you that is generous. And do you recognise that isn't everybody, that not everyone gives as much as what you do?
I believe as a player, we needed to do more. We needed to act more for the community, you know. And even to sign an autograph, is sometimes you're going to spend 20 minutes. So, but imagine I put my sons, you know, my kids on this. If he goes to someone to ask for autograph and they didn't get it, that's going to be sad for them. So imagine if a kid come to me and I just turn back my and to him and run away. That's not me. I'm not going to put my head on the bed, you know, and the pillow and sleep well with that. So that's what I try to do every time. Spend my time also not only on the inside of the pitch, but outside as well, because the most important thing is outside. Who makes the club is not the player, but the fans is the community as well. So it's very important, this environment with the people outside. We can always be close. That's why I had this very good relationships with the fans, because I like that. I like to be close to them.
And this giving back, it's now also the big brother putting the arm around the young Brazilian that's come in. You know, you've got Richarlison here, who I'm sure looks up to you. I mean, I've read interviews where he's talked about how he wants you to be always dealt with the respect that you deserve, because he, obviously he's a big, big fan of what you've brought to not only Brazilian football, but to English football and Brazilians wanting to come to England. And I believe as well, you have a WhatsApp group, which you've got all the Brazilians in the Premier League. It's got like David Luiz. Yeah. And is that right?
Yeah, we do have. We made this for good things. There were a guy here in. We are very close. You know, when we come from Brazil, we are very close. We try to have a contact. We go to each other's house, but we made this WhatsApp. We didn't have before. We made this WhatsApp to help a guy that need an air ambulance to go to Brazil. So he couldn't afford that. And when I made the group and said, guys, let's help this guy. He's dying, he's going, because he needed he needed a liver transplant.
Was he a normal guy or a player, a young
no,
player?
Someone that we understood through my wife, that he needed help. So we contact, today we still have this contact, this WhatsApp group, you know. And of course we are very close, and we try to be together all the time.
So with a World Cup on the horizon, putting your professional cap on now for Brazil, how excited are you about this World Cup for Brazil as a nation?
I'm very excited. I believe we have one of the best in the last 3 or 4 World Cup. And I believe we can deliver very good things in this one. So young players, but players with experience in Europe, and this is what exactly we are going to face: strong teams, strong opponents, but almost all of them are prepared, and they know what they're going to face. So the manager is very good. And he understands the players that he has. Sometimes you have a Ferrari, but you don't know how to drive.
So it's the Ferrari Neymar.
No, but I believe the Ferrari I can say today is the whole team. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
You don't know which player you're going to put, in which position you're going to put. So in these years in football, I saw so many good teams fail because they didn't have the good driver for the Ferrari, you know? So sometimes it's make the difference. And I believe Brazil has as well on the bench someone that going to lead us. I don't know, maybe we can win this.
I mean, how ambitious a young player is Richarlison? Because you must speak to him. In your position, you had Cesar, didn't you, who was always ahead of you. Yeah. It must have been very frustrating. Yeah. And being a Brazilian outfield player, Richarlison has really got his work cut out to get into that team. But he seems like that is his number one focus.
Yeah. First of all, when you are humble, you have more opportunity to get what you want. And he's a type of guy that I love him as a person that I believe will make the difference for him. You know, when he go to there to compete with someone in his level, so he can win that battle. Of course, he's still young, and he needs sometimes. He gets very frustrated still, that which is good, but you cannot be too much frustrated because that will affect you for the next game. This is the kind of things that I keep telling him. You have what the player has to have, is the quality, plus the person that you are. So you have everything. Be patient. Your time will come. You'll be the player that you want to be. Don't try to jump a step over. A step by step, you're gonna get there.
We're going to finish this up now because we've been talking, yakking away to you for a long time, and it's very much appreciated. We're a female-fronted football podcast. We pride ourselves in helping girls and women get into football, and we you know, hope that a lot of girls and women listen to this as well. I bet my bottom dollar that there are at least two very strong women in your life. I know your wife's very dynamic. She's a businesswoman. She's a worker, a bit like you. She knows what hard work is. Yeah. Talk to us about the women in your life.
First of all, my mum, that made everything for me to be what I'm is today. And she works very hard. Mm. Imagine 12 in her life to look after.
I can't imagine it's, too much.
That's amazing. No one went to a bad way, you know, and everyone, I believe she's proud of this because the hard work, she hard work, and my dad as well. But of course, she was influential for this whole thing to keep us in a very good way. And then my wife come in my life and she just changed my life. You know, I believe the difficult things in these days in football world is that the people get attention from small things. The players, the young players, they get attention from small things. And when a wife such as my wife goes to your life, they can make the difference on your career as well, because that was she did, you know. She, when I start from Cruzeiro to PSV, Spurs, Hoffenheim, I left them here and they went, they used to go there weekends to see me. So when always supportive, you know, always there. You can count.
A rock.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll leave the last word to Lindsay Hooper as we wrap it up.
Yes. Well, just thank you very much for giving us your precious time. And in terms of the future now, it's a really difficult one because you're at that point where you've still got some playing years left. But I guess, is there any part of you that's already thinking about the next steps?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know when it's going to be, but I believe it's very close. It's very close. I have to think about this season. If I can be important in any area at the club, I will carry on. But if not, I prefer to get another step. But that is something that you cannot just do it. You have to think about this to not regret after. So I always acted like this, thinking before, then I will act. But everything, God knows everything, and I understand that He has prepared great things for me after football.
Good luck with it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Offside Rule Exclusives is produced by Offside Productions and edited by Lucy Lavery.